Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.
A lot of people ranting about personal space. I live alone. I've got a doggy for company, a little Jack Russell named Elmo. He hates it when I get in his personal space. He's the least cuddly dog I ever did meet. I love him nonetheless, but I wish I could cuddle on the couch with him. Anything. Just get a little bit of love from him. Maybe he just doesn't feel anything for you. I have need to rant about man spreading. I take 3 buses a day. I'm subjected to this on a regular basis. Men who are smaller than I am think it's okay to move their knobbly knees across the seat where I'm bunching into the window to try and not let our bodies awkwardly touch. I asked the guy once, could he put his legs back together? And when I got the simple reply, my testicles need the room more than you. I never asked anyone ever again. Wow. In cattle shawns, according to Francis, it's called the flight zone. If you move slowly towards them, you can find the edge of it, then wait a few seconds and they will usually move towards you and sniff to see if you're a threat. I love my cattle. They're so cool if you understand them, says Francis. Is that Marie true. Joins us once again. Is that
yeah,
true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Treat them with kindness and care.
No, but because we just did a thing about personal space and they did this study. That's when they first figured it out that they're like, we're following deer or something around the place, and they could actually measure how close they could get to them before the deer would move off going, oh, you're a threat.
Yeah. And, you follow any animal like that. I was out in the fields there on Saturday morning and there was a pheasant and I could just hear him. You know, he was sitting in the rushes and I kept moving towards him and he was talking away to himself or whoever he was calling to. But when I got kind of, you know, the width of the studio here to him, up to the air and straight flew away.
Yeah.
You know, now, and it was a cock pheasant as well. So, yeah, that's the suit.
That's the way they go. So we're not going to talk about, I think, I don't know if we've ever talked about this kind of farming before, flower farming.
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, and flowers have to be grown. There's an awful lot of them imported. You know, all those lilies and all those roses for Valentine's Day. Now, we're not talking about replacing, flowers to that level. There's always going to be imports required. But there's a new organisation has been established called the flowerfarmersofireland.ie. And if you have a patch of ground at the back of your house and you have a partiality towards flowers and you mightn't be any, or you might be a bit good at producing them or rearing them or whatever you call it, growing them, it's an organisation. They have a lovely website, flowerfarmersofireland.ie, all one word. And so there's about, there's 22 members in the group, in the new organisation. And their motto is that they want to produce seasonal scented, freshly harvested Irish cut flowers and foliage, grown with love and arranged with flair. Now, isn't that nice?
Okay, well, that sounds lovely.
So that's what they're doing. So it's an All-Ireland support and advice group for people who are in the commercial cut flower and foliage, you know, area. And so, you know, it is also about import substitution. Because an awful lot of people now, they're not really looking at, you know, the set carnations with the Gypsophila, which is the right frothy stuff, and, you know, the single stem roses. They're really looking for stuff, for flower arrangements that look as if somebody has gone down the fields and picked them, or gone out to the back garden and just picked them and brought them in. And a lot of the members here of this Flower Farmers of Ireland, they are also flower arrangers, or they've taught themselves to be that, to do that. And in some cases now, we featured a couple of them in the Farmers Journal last week. And, you know, there were people, you know, an architect, somebody else who was working in design, and they got the opportunity to come live in the Irish countryside, patch of land, poly house, and off they are. Mm. And I was thinking to myself, you know, what would they be growing? Now, I could see, you know, in the summertime, yes, I was up in Nina Farmers Market, or Nina Country Market, actually. Is it a farmers market or country market? I can't remember which. But anyway, it takes place on a Friday. And there's a woman there that grows sweet pea. And sweet pea is beautifully scented. And if you're growing sweet pea, you have to keep it cut. You have to keep cutting the flowers off it, because as soon as it produces its pods, you know, it decides, that's it. I've kind of sown my seed. I don't need to produce any more flowers. Yeah. So if you keep cutting the flowers off, it says, oh my goodness, no seed sown. Going to have to keep producing flowers.
Yeah.
So this lady had the most incredible bunches of sweet pea. Like, they were just like astounding bunches, and she grows them all summer. So in the springtime, you're talking about scented narcissi, which are really, you know, posh daffodils, but they're beautifully scented. There's a lovely daffodil called Bridal Crown, and it's a multi-flowered daffodil, and the scent of it is just divine, especially if you go to a big patch of them. But tulips, they're growing tulips in every shade. They're growing anemones, hellebores, the primulas. Primulas are lovely. They're like kind of little primulas you see out in the fields, you know, the yellow buttercups or the cowslips, only they're the more garden variety of them. But there's these things called candelabra primulas, and they look for all the world like a candelabra with branches going all the way up. But they're kind of beautiful coral shades and deep purple and bright pink. So they're growing those. Solomon's seal is another very fancy kind of flower arranger's plant and very hardy. Cherry blossom. We all love cherry blossom. And it's another one of the flowers that have been grown. And right now in summer, you're talking about beautiful roses, stock, poppies, sweet pea, sweet William, dahlias, clematis, honeysuckle. So the range is huge. Even in the wintertime, you're talking about holly and viburnum, snowdrops, crocuses, and then both dried flowers that would have been grown during the summer that are suitable for drying, and also seed heads and pine cones, which are wonderful in, you know, different arrangements at that time of the year. So there's a huge number of plants or flowers that can actually be grown. And most people grow flowers for a garden. And if you're a good gardener, very often you never have a flower in the house. Because you hate disturbing your looking garden.
Flowers,
and, you know, you're not going to cut down your two most nicest peonies because they'll sit in the garden and they look real well for, you know, a couple of weeks. Mm. So gardeners are not inclined to bring flowers. Well, they're not. I know I'm a gardener, and I only for the daffodils, there'd hardly be a flower in the house. And I've often considered setting up like a couple of drills, like you grow spuds or cabbage and have like a row of dahlias and a row of, you know, sweet pea or whatever. And then have no problem, have no conscience about cutting them and bringing them into the house and destroying your lovely garden. So anyway, it's a new organisation, as I said, 22 members. And the whole objective is to have that beautiful seasonal scented, locally produced cut flowers.
Do we import many much flowers?
I don't know what the tonnage is, but look, there's a flower shop in every corner in the country.
Well, it's true, yeah. You'd wonder where they all comes from.
Yeah, and most of them, I'd say, come from Holland, to be honest. And if you should look at outside every petrol station, forecourt, garage forecourt, I always, in the wintertime, I dare, and their poor flowers freezing. And why? And, you know, there's probably a wind and a gale force wind coming down by them as well. And, you know, like, honest to God, the people when, you know, especially now these potted plants and stuff now, because now is the time where people are filling up their flower beds, and you go into places and nothing has been watered and it's all collapsed, and then they throw a bit of water on it, up it comes, and but it's, you know, it's not going to be right again. So you kind of nearly cringe for the poor plants. One of the things I cringe for, I always feel so sorry for them, I feel like buying the shop full, is you know, when shops buy these bulbs in a bag, you know, like say dahlias now come out now in August, or daffodil bulbs, and nobody buys them, and they sit there in the heat, and then they start to produce, you know, stems or whatever you call them, you know, blossom stems or leaves. And they're still in their little bag inside in the shop, hanging up on the rail. And they're begging, please plant me, you know, please love me. And not a chance of it.
Right, it's also a strawberry.
Yes, I said I'd be terribly positive today. Yeah.
Yes, you're being very positive.
I'm going to tell you a story about strawberries.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Our youngest is Richard is his name. And he was very slow to kind of get chatting. Now, the thing is, he didn't need to, because every need was fulfilled. he had adoring parents, an older brother and sister, so he never had to talk.
Yeah.
So anyway, he had a cousin, or he has a cousin who's about 6 months younger than him. And while Richard would be saying, and na, and no, and mama, this other fella would be saying to me, Auntie Mairead, why can't the baby speak properly? That's no joke. He was about 6 months younger. So anyway, I said I'd get the speech therapist in to look at this fella. And anyway, she said, give him another few months. Give him another few months. So around June, because I never forget it, around June he was with me in the supermarket, and in the trolley of the you know, sitting in the seat of the trolley. And he loves strawberries. Mm. And anyway, he saw the new strawberries, or he recognised the strawberries, and he started to get very excited in the trolley. And I had a look at the strawberries and they were an outrageous price and I couldn't afford them. And I left them there and I went back and, you know, kept moving on with the trolley. And the next thing he got really looking behind him and looking like pointing and all the rest of it. And the next thing he shouted out to the top of his voice, "Mama, strawberries!" Now, he hadn't just said one word, he'd said a two-syllable word.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And he put it in a sentence.
Close enough to a sentence.
So I raced back and got a whole pile of strawberries. And it was like as if the floodgates opened because he'd spoken proper sentences straight away.
Yeah.
Like he never went through a stage of not, you know, he went from no talk to all talk in the space of the strawberries. So anyway, I have a real soft spot for strawberries and we are munching through 10,500 tons of them a year. Now, you know, strawberries are very light.
Yeah.
And to create 10,500 tons, it's an awful lot of strawberries. So we're up about 5%. The crop is worth about 96 million. That would be Kantar, the World Panel figures that they produce. So it's fairly significant, especially considering when there's only, 57 strawberry growers in the country. Now, there's thousands...
But you know the way you see strawberry sellers on the side of the road this time of the year. Is that just an Irish thing?
No, that's just a Wexford thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Wexford isn't called the model county. It's a model county for no reason, you know. Wexford have a very high opinion of everything they do down there.
And rightly so.
Yeah. My mother was a Wexford woman, so I lived with it all my life. But they believed, well, they're in the sunny southeast. And to be fair, most of the strawberries in the country are grown in either Dublin, Wexford, Meath or Kildare. And it's to do with, I suppose, high levels of sunshine. There's a man out there in Stamullen, Pat Clark, and he came over, his family would have been brought over from the west of Ireland to farm in Meath, you know, when they were allocating farms out with the old land commission long ago. So he would have been literally transplanted up to Meath. And his first summer there, I think he was 12 or 13, and he helped a lady with her, she had four drills, I think, or five drills of strawberries. Or she had a small patch of strawberries and he helped her process them or, you know, pick them. And then the next year he put them in himself. And he's had strawberries ever since. He even went into dairy and got back out of it to concentrate on the strawberries. The strawberries are gorgeous. But as I said, the majority of them produce all along the Leinster coast. And tough year for them. You know, very bad winter, set back the growth. I mean, flowers are set back a month, according to the flower farmers. The strawberry guys say, at least a week before, a week late, the crop coming in. But remarkably, it's done really well. And, you know, they're expecting production and consumption to be up again this year.
Let's hope so. I'm Ray Lavery from the Farmers Journal. Thanks a million for coming in to us. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.